Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
One, two, three, listen.
Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo Padalinghug, a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different faiths and backgrounds together to learn to love and accept one another. Even if we disagree, we have to be willing to listen to each other as God does with us and as God wants us to do for each other. We're not going to be getting into the deep or the high, lofty theological principles, but rather taking those things of our faith and making it practical by listening to each other. And this week, I'm going to listen to Eddie Imperato, who's a design manager for a digital marketing agency in Maryland. He loves the outdoors. He's a true millennial, energetic. He's a little bit different, as he describes him, and you'll hear when I talk about faith. He describes his faith as B-. So it's going to be a pretty great conversation. And if you want to support us and our podcast, just simply go to platinggrace.com and click on Support Us, which leads to our Patreon page. As a supporter, you'll gain access to premium content and other special perks. But for now, join me and my guest as I shoot the shiitake and a deep dish discussion with Eddie Imperato, talking about the coronavirus, millennials, and faith. So welcome, Eddie Imperato, to Shoot the Shiitake. First of all, I want to ask you, what did you think of the meal tonight?
The meal was phenomenal.
Maybe you can just do me a favor and describe it in like a millennial point of view.
Oh my goodness. All right, so it started out with this...
Oh, you got to talk in the microphone though. There you go.
Oh, it started out with this pretty warm tortilla with this beef I had never experienced before. That was, I guess, sauteed and... Well, you said that it simmered. In this...
It's sous vide, actually.
Yes, that was the better word.
And then we just had some vegetables, some... The cabbage. The cabbage actually tasted really good, didn't it?
I had a second serving of it.
And then rice, some guacamole, some sour cream, compliments of Eddie. And we just started talking about Corona and the culture. And as a millennial, you've never experienced anything like this before, having been locked down, have you?
Not yet, no.
Let me ask you, what do you feel about this whole thing? Like, what are you going through as a young person living alone, working in the tech industry? What are you feeling? What are the thoughts going on in your mind?
I'm nervous. I try not to listen to all the hype and everything. I think I'm definitely nervous of, I just don't know when it will end. That's the biggest thing. I just don't foresee it, but I try and...
Well, tell me, when you say you don't know what it's going to end, does it matter when it ends for you?
No, because my job allows me to work remote and take care of my team. So that's, I'm fortunate.
So you've got a job. Yes. You've always got a job now. But when, if, like, ending, you want it to end because?
I want it to end so that we can get back to the daily grind of what we think life typically was, I guess.
Okay. And what was it like? Tell me what it was like for you as a young millennial professional.
So I manage a team of roughly 25 people. And it's a grind every day to stay on top of the team, the new work, and things like that. Then my weekends are fueled with staying active in all sorts of realms.
What does that mean? Tell me that.
So hobbies include going out to restaurants and going out drinking to the bars and things like that. You know, maybe having one or too many drinks.
This isn't a confession, so you're
good. No. So, you know, I don't think we ever stop. It's grind, grind, grind. Work hard, play hard, and then there's never the detox, which I think right now has been the largest. The largest, I guess, notification in my mind, really.
Yeah.
It's like I can now finally just sit back and analyze how busy my life actually was while still maintaining my job, but forced.
And when you say busy, it was busy, obviously, with work. It's 9 to 5. Did you have to take work home?
I tried not to, yeah.
And after you finished the job, what kept you busy in the evening?
You know, trying to find dinner, maybe going for a run, then...
So exercise and eating.
Yeah.
And socializing.
So yeah, exactly. Maybe a happy hour, or maybe we go out to Netflix, and then you watch movies. You never stop occupying yourself.
And what about any day of rest? And we talked about this just a little bit earlier during dinner, because... You know, when I first met Eddie, full disclosure, he was my neighbor, and we met on 4th of July a few years ago, and when he asked me, because this is what we do, we ask, you know, what do you do for a living? I said, this is going to sound weird, but I'm a priest with a cooking show, and Eddie's first response was, I went to Christian school.
That's exactly how it happened.
But, I mean, you're a Christian of some sort. What about this day of rest? And I mean, you kind of feel like this coronavirus has given you many days of rest. And what are you doing with it?
Yeah. So going back to the day of rest, my day of rest never really actually happened. I guess you could consider that waking up on a Sunday morning and then cleaning my house, if that's what you consider a day of rest, or maybe I'll, you know, go on a quick run.
Mm-hmm.
As far as,
but you never actually rested.
As far as actually sitting there besides watching television, no, there's no way. That just doesn't make...
And do you think that even just watching television and chilling out, is that restful?
No, because you'd be on your phone, you'd be searching Amazon, you'd be searching for Facebook and scrolling infinitely, and then...
And so, like, this whole corona thing has literally just made everybody stop.
Yeah, like, I've actually used social media less than ever now. Because really? I know what's on it. Because we've gone through every single problem. If you want to find the bad information and the people freaking out, then yeah, sure, go on there. But yeah, I haven't, because of my work as well, but I've tried to stay off social media because I know exactly what's going to be on there, and it's going to just frustrate me. So.
Okay, so but you've made a deliberate decision not to do it. So besides work, what is now occupying Eddie so that you feel healthier? I don't know. You tell me. Are you healthier now in this corona?
Yeah, it's forced quarantine? Me. It's forced me to not order out. I've refused to order.
Well, I think you meals. Should order out something so to support the local economy.
Well, yeah,
but that's
sure,
the point.
Sure. But I don't want the transaction to happen via one of those employees. So I have been
you're
making
talking about not contracting corona from
correct
an employee.
From
Got
even
it.
Just a simple business.
Got it.
But again, that's
all right. But you're eating healthier.
I'm making my own meals. I am eating a little bit lighter. I'm being conscious of everything that I put into my body, as well as creating tasks of things that I have wanted to do on the weekends that I've just been either too tired or too burnt out. I've been doing things around the house as the day goes on while maintaining my full work.
So like what kind of tasks are you doing?
So I bought my house in November. I have been putting off so many tiny organizational things, such as organizing my clothes, donating things. I have tons of projects in terms of my little basement where I have to get storage and creating... it's basically been lots of trips to Home Depot in anticipation that Home Depot was going to close.
Sure.
And then build myself those tasks.
So you are finding that there's like a positive side to this corona situation?
I think it's a great wake-up call for myself, personally. It's been the best thing.
What are you waking up to?
that I need to focus on myself and not just get pulled into every single friendship and distraction that's out there. And you put off so many things, and I call them clouds. I call them clouds, things that just hover over you for months and you refuse to do them, such as taxes or a to-do list that you just can't ever figure out because you just say, I'll do it. Those are things that have...
So let me get a little metaphysical. What about sleep and true rest? Are you getting more of that because of this thing?
I would say from a sleep pattern, I've been always pretty good with it. But yeah, I think I've been more consistent. I don't have to worry about my commute.
What about relationships with people that you ought to have relationships with? Talking about like family and close friends. Are you able to do that because of this?
Because of the coronavirus, absolutely. There's been a lot more friendships, group chats, iMessage, and things like that, that we've all been pretty much closer, which has been really neat.
Okay, and then let's get even deeper. What about just kind of asking the bigger questions? What does life mean? You know, spirituality, all of those things that I think people are afraid to acknowledge, but it's times like this when we realize, my God, is this the end of the world? Is this the end of something? Do you get to that point?
I haven't yet. I have not, in terms of the end of the world.
Sure.
Because I try to be a little bit military about it, to try not to get myself that anxious.
Got it.
Have I thought about, you know, oh, do I need to go to the gun shop and get a shotgun or a gun or something like that? Yeah, this definitely crossed my mind. As I said, I'm very nervous, but sure.
I don't think it is either, but it does point to our fragility. Like, we are very dependent on a lot of things. I mean, if someone messes with our water system,
that is,
that's a big deal.
That's a huge...
Someone messes with the electronic or the internet grid.
Right. If that goes, my job and our entire industry that I'm in will go down.
And where does that make you turn? Like, how do you find peace in the middle of all of these, what I call overhanging dark clouds? Where do you get strength, encouragement, inspiration? I just want to hear it from a dude, like a millennial dude, and you are that. You're a little scrappy guy from Westchester. So as he takes a drink, he's thinking, where do you get this strength? Or where do you get this? Or is it like you don't think about it and so you kind of just play blind?
Maybe it's definitely a bit of a blind thing. Like, I don't want to face reality in that terms.
Okay.
I try to look at my grandparents who had to go through seriously much more worse things, and I think that kind of squashes it all for me.
Yeah,
it's like, let's not worry about my thoughts and you know, the World War II. My poppy was in it, and my grandparents were in it. They went through it for years, not just 2 weeks. So I think that that's what kind of calms me down.
Mm-hmm.
But in getting more so deeper into, you know, what's next, yeah, I haven't quite gotten there yet.
Okay, yeah, because sometimes people probably have distractions. And right now, what I want to do is talk about a distraction. You are now in a kind of a new relationship.
Sure, yes.
Well, I mean, you came out of one, and you're just kind of looking to just explore new things.
Correct.
Exactly. I want to talk about dating a little bit for millennials and your particular situation. Because, okay, you know, you were with somebody, a friend.
Yeah.
And she was also kind of like a girlfriend.
Right.
For how many years did this last?
We dated 5 years together.
5 years. That's a long time. And what point did you just realize, I'm not getting married to you? Or did she say that to you?
No. It was, I think we enjoyed the life that we built together. We had a lot of things that held us together, such as two cats and things like that. I think we both just mutually agreed that we need to continue on.
And it was a mutual agreement, but what was it that made you realize this is not going anywhere?
Well, more so I think it was a physical thing for us rather than...
Look, just remember, Eddie, you don't have to worry about me or what anything. You say whatever you want.
Yeah.
So don't... I mean, this is just a conversation because more importantly, this is about me learning what life is like for young men and young women in this world.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a physical issue that kind of drove us... and put a wedge in between us. It was something that we had always tried to find hard. We tried to really get that missing portion of our relationship. Because I think
you're talking about a physical intimacy,
correct?
You're talking about sex.
Yeah,
you're talking about sex before marriage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so let me just ask you, just for the sake of it, what do you believe about the sexual activity or just relationships before marriage? What is that for you?
I think there's a right and wrong answer.
I'm not here to judge it. I just kind of want to understand.
Right. No, I think that you need to be very selective with who you choose to be your partner.
So not a hooking up. You're not into that.
I think I grew out of that. That was more so a college experience for me, and maybe a 20s type of thing. But now as a 30s, I don't want any of that. I actually forget that question.
It's all right. It's like, so what did you think of? What is the role of sex, dating, before marriage, all of that stuff?
I think there needs to be an end point. That's what I learned from this relationship, is that there needs to be an end point on this, the entire relationship. We had moved in initially together to try and see if we could work. However, we just got comfortable, and then that comfort turned into more so we tolerated each other towards the end. And I think that you need to say, we will see if we're compatible for a year or two. And then you need to make an analysis as to if this is a real commitment or not.
Yeah. But is it kind of like test driving?
It is. But I think that I look at this as an excellent mistake for the both of us. There's no divorce. There's no children. There's no lawyers or legal issues.
Well, there could have been children.
There could have been.
There could have
been. Very much could
and
have been.
And there could have been legal issues. It was kind of like a quasi-marriage.
It was. It was a very, I guess...
It was a commitment without
way,
a commitment.
Exactly. It was a cheap way out of a marriage.
Isn't that interesting? So those are your words.
I think that we would both agree that it was basically like we were married in a way.
And what did you learn from all of it? I mean, are you going to do that again?
I don't think so. I would move in with someone with the expectation that I need to know after a few months or a year that this, I can manage that.
So you still want to give it that old test run?
I think so, yes.
Really?
I would definitely do a test run once more.
Why?
Because I found out a lot of things and people change. That's the scariest part. I guess I'm more so scared of the divorce on my record, the imaginary record that doesn't really exist, but it does.
So it kind of, I mean, again, no accusation, no judgment, no criticism. I'm just trying to basically understand, what do you believe then about marriage as a millennial? Isn't it supposed to be unconditional love? That you're going to love the person even if things do change?
As a millennial, and I'm on the upper side of it, I don't believe that just generation can do what our parents and grandparents did.
What do you mean?
I think there's a lot of pressure because my parents are married, mm-hmm. and they've never gotten divorced. But I think that our generation has too many outlets to find somebody else to replace whatever void it is that you're missing.
Is that what you want? A marriage that can end when...
Well, I don't. I want the same thing my parents have in different ways. I want to stay committed to someone, but I think I'm too picky. So I will never, ever get that unconditional vibe.
You really?
I think so.
Do you don't believe that you are capable of unconditionally loving someone?
I do. No, I think I can. No,
you can.
I will. No, for sure. I definitely am loyal to my partner in terms of being there for them, doing... I learned about a lot of small things that go a long way.
Okay. And so this unconditional, I guess I'm fascinated by this because this is a shift in mentality that I, as a priest and much older than you, even though gratefully you think that I'm younger, and I love you for that. But this unconditional love, what does that mean for you? Because you say that you can do it and you want to do it, but it's there's an easy way out of it, and there's so many examples of it. So what are you exactly are you looking for?
In my partner or for myself?
From yourself. I mean, when you say, I am going to unconditionally love you.
So I think the unconditional love is seeing a female with no makeup on. Uh-huh. I think that that is a very different experience that you have to get used to.
How about when she has no makeup on and it's her time of the month?
That is another experience that you have to get used to.
And how about if she, just for whatever reason, is just emotionally distant from you?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Or how about if you are attracted to another woman?
That is a very difficult problem. That is an extremely difficult problem. That's where another instance where it's like, that might be a problem where I struggle.
Okay, so...
As every guy, for the most part.
Yeah, and I think every guy is going to experience, like, my heart is being tempted and tested in so many ways. But back to what you are looking for in a relationship, you're thinking that I'd still want to test run it for a couple months before? I mean, the statistics are very obvious that it doesn't lead to a marriage, and if it does, it oftentimes leads to divorce because of this unconditional quality. So I just kind of want to hear, and I'm not pressing you to agree with me. I'm certainly not. I'm just trying to certainly understand what you as a young man, because you do represent a lot of what a lot of young people go through. What are you looking for? Should I pour you a little bit more wine too?
Yeah. Let's get a little bit more in there. I think that it boils down to an attraction mixed with personality.
Okay.
I was very troubled with an attraction at times. And that's something that you learn, or you don't learn, I guess, is the thing. I think attraction is extremely valuable. And I had multiple relationships where things weren't balanced right. It was either too much attraction and not enough chemistry, or too much chemistry and not enough attraction. So I'm looking for that middle ground on both levels, where I am truly attracted and I can have a great conversation about anything.
Okay.
That's kind of maybe a generic answer, but I kind of think that our generation...
So if you get that, why would you move in with someone to test that? Because if you got that with somebody and you'd want that, would there be a point in your life when I'm going to say, well, you know what? I'm not going to test it. I'm going to take a leap of faith and believe this, that you are the person for me and that hopefully I am the person for you. That takes a serious amount of faith.
It does.
And that is part of an unconditional love, isn't it? I mean, it's like...
Yeah. Like, I guess that I don't trust myself that I am...
Faithful.
Able to be that, yeah.
Well, then let me ask you. Again, I am not trying to coax answers. I'm just literally trying to learn. Knowing that that's what you want, where do you go to get that? What do you do? Who do you talk to? Who do you read? Who do you listen to get that?
Well, I'll tell you what doesn't work. I try what things I've done. Yeah. I haven't really necessarily... I prefer the organic way of meeting human beings, whether that would be in a grocery store or friends through friends or things like that. Bars, typically don't do
less,
well
less
there.
Bars, yeah. But just kind of more.
Just finding another human being that isn't through like a dating app. Tried dating apps. And they just, it seems like everyone's just looking for the next funny new thing. It's like a shiny new toy. I think that's just, and that's what's kind of hurting us. Because everyone else thinks that everyone else has that shiny new toy on the side.
And your culture almost breeds that. There's always something shiny. There's always something new. Yeah,
you think about it as an iPhone. There's a new iPhone coming out in three months, and boom, that's it.
All the time.
It's the same thing as a guy or a girl, depending on what you want.
So, generationally speaking, do you think that your generation, I mean, it's got some great things to it, and it's also got some challenges. I'd love to hear, what do you think your generation has something positive to offer to the world, and what are some of the negatives that it has given to the world?
What does our generation have that's positive?
Yeah, isn't that funny? Like, you should be able to think very clearly. Like,
I think our generation is what is, we know that we can never stop learning. That's it. That's the best part. I think our parents struggle with adapting to anything that is not comfortable.
Give me an example.
Apps. Let's just stick with apps. We've been notifications like that. When a new app comes out, whether it's TikTok or Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook, we're explorers. That's it. We will find out how to use whatever it is that we're doing. And that's the easiest way I can put it. We want to learn, and we're not afraid to just, oh, I'm a landscaper. I'll be a landscaper my whole life. We're not going. Our generation understands that we want something better for ourselves. I have somehow never been able to keep a job for 2 years. It's not that I can't, it's that I think there's something better, and it's helped me to grow my career.
Okay.
In terms of, I think that we know that if we sit and get stagnant, that we will be stuck there. And I think that's a huge fear for everyone, and it encourages
us
to grow.
In your generation.
In our generation.
And that also applies, obviously, in relationships then, clearly.
I think that it bleeds into it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it sounds like it. Like, if you are feeling like you're stuck and in a rut.
Yeah, just run from it.
Run from it. And so for you, that's a positive, but it also can become a great negative.
It also is a negative because now my resume looks like I can't hold a job for 2 years. Yeah. Or now I have to change my paperwork that, you know, and then taxes become a problem. And it's a trickle effect, but, you know.
So transitory life is a good way to describe it. And that is a positive thing.
I think
you're constantly moving forward. You're constantly advancing.
Our generation knows how to do that.
And any other things that you think your generation does that's really quite kind of positive? Because I look at it sometimes and I just like roll my eyes because I'm an old man now in a younger man's body, according to you. And I, for that, again, I love you.
Right.
But the idea of the millennial culture, and you're just now old enough where you are still a millennial, but you can look back as a wiser millennial, an older millennial.
Yeah, I think that I think we're good at producing content. We're good at, well, maybe we're good at faking it, but we're good at portraying what we want others to see.
Okay.
I think that's a pretty...
In Italian, that would be la bella figura. You always want to make sure you look good. Even if you don't know what the heck you're doing, I look damn good doing it.
I mean, yeah, there's a persona that we all have, and we're going to make sure that we uphold it and follow the trends and just stay on top of it. I think that we're passionate as well about the things that we do.
You're passionate. Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
For sure. We're brand aware and we stick to that
life. For sure.
Yes. I think we're very loyal to what it is that we're doing until we become bored, I guess, is the best kind of another thought.
I look at that certainly with politics. There's a lot of young people who are absolutely completely unaware of who they're supporting, but the brand is strong and resonates with them. And so they'll literally die on their own sword for something that they don't fully understand. But that's another story.
Right.
So what would be some of the critiques that you can offer?
I think the things that we don't do well, critiques from our generation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you think could be improved upon? Anything that you realize, gosh, we are kind of that way. Yeah, we need to be better at it.
I think we need to toughen up. As bold as a statement as that, I'm now not sensitive, I think it's ridiculous. I think that we have become overly sensitive, and people, I think the biggest thing in our generation is the fact that people need to be uncomfortable. It's not a bad thing.
So a couple things that I'm hearing there is that you think that this millennial generation is too comfortable.
I think so.
And they're not tough enough.
Tough is a sensitive word. I think they need to realize
your grandfather and grandma.
Tough.
They lived
tough.
Through like
we would
almost
have never
the Depression
done it.
Era.
There is no question in my mind. I would have been like, I'm not doing that.
What would you have done? Just like jump off a building or something?
Maybe. My grandfather was like a seamstress who like sewed stuff all day. I would have never done that, no matter what. And I think that our generation is so comfortable with pretending whoever they are, and you know, even when it comes to work, it's like, if I have to do an extra hour of work, I'm now officially burnt out, and that drives me insane.
You're in charge of a bunch of millennials.
I am, yes. I've seen a different side of things. I've realized things about myself that I did that could have been problematic to managers that have oversaw me in the past.
Sure.
So I think that we really need to analyze when we're uncomfortable and why you think that.
Yeah, I find that kind of interesting, because basically your critique is after you've had experience, you're now in management position overseeing these things, you can see where the flaws of your generation is. So maybe one of the issues is that while you guys are constantly searching for the next big thing, you're not really gaining experience.
I think
in
so
things. I mean, like, you could technically just kind of have a couple weeks and go traveling somewhere. Do you do that?
I don't travel per se as much as I should.
How about learning a new language?
I'm very slow with that.
How about
I count
like,
to 10. It took me 3 years to count to 10 in Italian.
Your name is Italian, but that's besides
right.
the point. What about like picking up a new hobby?
I think YouTube's the greatest thing ever. So I have not picked up hobbies per se, but my ability to utilize YouTube and understand the power of the internet and use it for its good is impeccable.
Do people do it?
I think everyone does. All of my friends
Your
do
generation
personally.
Does.
I think my generation's.
So can I ask you, this is going to, I hate pricking the conscience or pushing the button, but is there something that you guys don't research that might actually be helpful for you?
Yeah, probably our emotional status.
Okay, like just emotional awareness?
Yeah, probably.
Anything else?
I probably how to do relationships well. I don't think we probably Google those. We Google how to make, you know, we Google DUI projects, but we don't Google YOU projects.
And what about, I'm just going to say it. What about like growing in your faith? People don't seek those out, do they?
No. So I may not necessarily surround myself with the most religious people, sure. but they're consciously
Dude,
good
Dude, you just
people.
Had dinner with a priest.
I know, right? I'm doing pretty well then.
What made you want to come and have dinner with me?
Personality of Father Leo.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, he's cool. And then the food.
Okay.
Food is spectacular, and I overeat till.
Until
but
you
it's
have to
okay.
confess gluttony.
Yeah. It's the best day of my life when these food things happen.
No, but I mean, it's interesting because I think that there is a hunger for spirituality. I just don't think people know exactly where to go.
I think personally, I don't want to speak on.
Sure, please don't.
Personally, but I want to say that I will. My past kind of influenced where I'm at now.
Your past?
My past being involved with
church and Sunday
church
school.
Church and Sunday school and private Christian school and things
and
like that kind of pushed me out of that.
Interesting.
In the best way. Well, not the best way possible, but it has influenced my decisions today.
So it's given you a foundation, but it's pushed you and rubbed you in a wrong way that you don't feel like you need to have it front and center and as a necessary part of your life.
Correct.
What do you, like the corona thing didn't push you to turning to prayer? Or did it? Did it make you think about anything spiritually?
No. Not really. No, I don't think it has.
Okay.
I think that I'm like, you know, as I said, like nervous. So it's definitely probably in the back of my mind, but I haven't sought out to pray every day or read the Bible a little bit more or things like that. mainly because I'm more of a spiritual Christian who doesn't do the works on the ground.
Okay.
Like,
tell me what that looks like.
I think it's like 1 Corinthians something. I always remember this one. Okay. We walk by faith and not by sight.
Okay.
So I don't do anything externally. Like, I don't go to church and I don't go to anything. I don't go to church. I don't attend any sort of, I don't donate my money to the church at all. I apologize. But no, I believe in Jesus. I just don't do anything that proves it.
About
physically.
It.
I am more so, I believe in God in my own mind, and I talk to him when I need to.
Okay.
Which is probably not the best practice, but I walk by my faith, and I don't do what I don't try and prove it to anybody.
Okay. No, this is, I mean, for me, this is absolutely incredible. If there was something that you could ask a priest, what would that be? What do you think a millennial... A millennial, your generation, you personally, or with someone you think would just like, look, I've never had a chance to talk to a priest. I would love to ask a priest, bam.
I say, am I going to go to heaven? I want to know if I want to go to heaven, but you can't tell me that. But that was my question. If I had to ask a priest a question, I'd say, well, am I going to go to heaven?
Interesting.
That's probably my question. If I had one, that would be it.
Really?
That would be it.
Really? Yep. That is very interesting.
Am I going to go to heaven? I believe in heaven and hell. I would definitely do.
Where do you want to go?
I put heaven and hell like this. Hell is an absolutely the worst hangover that never goes away.
I think it's actually even worse than that.
It might be, but it's a headache that happens at 10 a.m. that never goes away. That's what I feel like hell is.
Okay.
And heaven is just a good time, I guess.
Is like the buzz?
I don't know.
I mean, you just have
just think you can be sober. You can be sober in heaven. I'm cool with it. As long as it's a good day and it's a good music in the background.
Oh my God. Okay, just I'm going to ask, what song is in the background? What kind of music?
Something.
Give me a band.
We can go with a little Dave Matthews in the background.
Dave Matthews.
Maybe something easy.
Okay.
Nothing. I'm not a Dave Matthews fan per se, but
something chill.
Something nice and easy.
Jack Jones.
Jack Johnson. Yeah.
Jack Johnson.
Yeah.
See, just proved how old I am. Jack, who is Jones?
It's his brother. You didn't know about
Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson. Oh, they're cousins.
Cousins. Davy Jones.
Yeah, there
the
we go.
Monkeys. All right, one last question, Eddie. And I can't thank you enough for joining me and just kind of sharing with me what goes on in a young millennial's mind during a real difficult crisis. I'm going to kind of be sharing my carry-out order when I return. But final question for you, Eddie. What can I, as a Catholic priest, do to help you?
As a Catholic priest?
Well, it's because that's what I am.
No, I get it. I guess just do what you've done since I've known you more so. Just be an ear that listens without judgment. I think that's a pretty cool thing that this generation is maybe nervous about, that they're scared to talk to someone who's of a different power, quote unquote, where they're not going to judge you and you can just have a everyday conversation. I think that has been the most valuable thing that I didn't know existed. Which has been really cool, getting to know you over, I guess, the years, maybe a year or two?
That would be three.
3 years, yes, 3 years. No, but it's been, I think that our generation.
Four.
No, three.
Three, okay.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, I'm bad at numbers.
Maybe four.
Well, maybe four. I think it's four, dude.
Yeah,
4 years. So just a listening ear?
Just our generation needs to know that they're not going to send you to hell. You know, just by talking. I think that's
sure.
The greatest thing. It's like, I think our generation is like, oh no, a Catholic priest. There's no way. You have proved that there is a human side to the church, which I think is missing in the eyes of maybe people that are younger. And I think people are scared that the Catholic priests may be rule-abiding citizens. And yes, they are, but they are also human, and they just want to have a good time. And Father Leo, you do that with food and just good communication. So,
oh well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, from A young man's perspective, corona, relationships, faith, spirituality. I've learned a lot, and I'm going to share with you in my carryout order when I return. I want to thank you, Eddie Imperato, for joining me here on Shoot the Shiitake. And welcome back for our carryout order, and I want to thank Eddie Imperato again for a very impromptu interview. We were just having dinner in the midst of the corona. Yes, we were keeping incredible social distance, but at the same time, it was a necessary and even helpful thing to do. We're all kind of quarantined, and as long as he was confident that he was keeping himself safe and healthy, I certainly am. I've been quarantined, haven't talked to really anyone, and so it was safe enough. And you kind of have to use that judgment. And yes, at this time in our life, maybe we need to take some risks. And that's kind of one of the things that I've learned in this conversation is that, you know, in Eddie's generation, they're not afraid to take risks in things they think are important to them. But unfortunately, one of the things that's not important to them might be their own spirituality or their understanding of morality. But if you press them a little bit, I found that Eddie was so willing to learn and to maybe even admit that some of the issues that he had really are just a result of him not exploring those deeper things as he would explore others. His definition of kind of a characteristic of a millennial was really fantastic. They do like to explore. They feel like they are unstoppable. But when it comes to matters of faith, maybe not so much. When it comes to matters of morality, and what will it take? Well, I'll be honest with you. There were times, certainly, when I would just want to debate him. But I'm not going to do that because that's not the point. This is about a judgment-free conversation. And hopefully if he's listening to the rest of this, he'll hear how he will hear himself and how he knows that, yeah, there are going to be some deeper things that I've got to explore and find on the internet, not just like wood carving or even maybe like what his grandfather did, how to be a seamstress, how to sew clothes, because these are the necessary things that make the world go round. One of the other things that I learned, especially in the midst of the coronavirus, is that while he and obviously other millennials think that it's important, it wasn't the thing that brings people to their knees. It doesn't feel like an epidemic to them. Maybe it's because it's a little kind of still far from us, and maybe because the media isn't being 100% honest with us, you know? But the idea of what would bring people, the millennial generation, to their knees? He mentioned it. It's if his livelihood is shaken up. And I will be very honest with you, the technology is just as vulnerable as our biology. You know, that the tech world is just as infectable with a virus as the human population is infectable with a virus. And so what we've got to do is maybe start giving people an opportunity to ask the deeper questions. When I was his age, I was already ordained a priest. But before that, when I was younger, in my 20s, I was asking really deep questions, you know, philosophical questions. And I don't necessarily see that happening with a lot of younger people. And when they do talk about philosophical questions, they always... well, they don't always, but the majority of them tend towards political philosophies. And that kind of, I don't want to say frightens me, but it certainly gives me concern, because before you can even do political philosophy, you just have to know philosophy in general. What are some philosophical principles? What are fallacious principles in philosophy? And a lot of people don't have classics or critical thinking skills, so they're taking just broken philosophy into their politics because they think that's what's going to save them. And that's not happening. They're not understanding the classics, and they're not asking the deeper questions. So what do we got to do? Well, I just learned that one of the things I've got to do is provide experiences for us to ask those deeper questions, just like my dinner with my fusion steak fajita recipe. that certainly warmed things up, and it gave us an opportunity to have a deeper conversation. You know, Eddie and I, you know, he is certainly a friend and a good friend. What I find interesting is that when we do get together, which isn't, you know, super regularly, a good handful of times throughout the year, we do generally talk about deep things. And he doesn't see it as probing, because I'm not trying to be a prober, you know, that would be uncomfortable and inappropriate. But I'm not afraid to inject a question that just is deeper. And I think because we have had a good enough relationship and a friendship, he knows that when I ask him something, it's not going to be to try to, you know, mentally, you know, play chess with him or to debate him. Nope. It's just a question and it's just a conversation. And I think at that point, it opens up the dialogue for more conversations that lead to conversion. So there was a lot from my carryout order, and I certainly hope you enjoy that conversation as much as I did. And I want to thank Eddie Imperato for being such a great example of someone who is truly unique. And off camera, well, actually off microphone, I asked him, you know, how would you describe your religious affiliation? And I loved his answer was B minus. That is perfect. But in my opinion, I think he's a stronger B than a B minus, because he at least has some foundations and he's willing to learn and he's willing to probably have conversations, which hopefully lead to conversion. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Please consider supporting our efforts and our movements at patreon.com/platinggrace, which gives you access to all of our premium content. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by Saint John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPII Teachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.